Tonight we're going to talk about crossing the Jordan River. And there's a lot of different ways you might think about that and think of that phrase, and you might guess that based off of "on Jordan stormy banks I stand," and then "on Jordan stormy banks I stand" for an invitation song, which I think will make sense here in a little bit. But the whole idea of this Jordan River came about, I was in a car ride with Mary and Trudy earlier this week, and we were passing a creek, and there was a little bit of a rolling water, and I was like, I think that's about the size of the Jordan River. And I had never actually sat down and looked closely at this, and we have a world of technology where we can, and I'm going to go through that here in a little bit about just trying to put this crossing of the Jordan River into our modern day eye, and where we can kind of see ourselves in that situation. Okay, that's what we're going to do tonight. And then we'll close out the evening by looking at the words of the song we sang a moment ago on Jordan's stormy banks and how it relates. So I want you to think about, for just a second here, I want you to go to Joshua the third chapter. In Joshua the third chapter, we're only going to deal with this story very briefly. The majority of us will know this particular story where the Jordan River was that river that separated the children of Israel from their promised land. That land in which God had promised to their father Abraham. He had promised directly to them through Joshua that they were going to take and it was going to be theirs. And that land was right there in front of them. But they had to conquer all of these foes and all of these people that lived in. Hence why Joshua was told, be strong and courageous. And what we see is that when they get to this water, the banks are overflowed. And there's not bridges, there's not fords that would be able to withstand that. There would be no way for them to get across. And God performs a miracle where He dams the water up quite a ways. He dams the water, the land, or the water becomes dry ground, and the people all pass onto this promised land on dry ground. Well, you remember how that kind of took place. Joshua was commanded by the Lord, you tell the priests, go with the ark into the water. And when they went into the water, that was when the water stopped. And Joshua also commanded the people, pick one person from each of the tribes. Remember, there were 12 tribes. So each tribe selected one person, and they were to go to the feet of the priest in the bed of the river. They were to take a rock, and they were to place that rock on the other side in the promised land. And they were to mound that up, and the name of the place was called Gilgal, because it was the rolling back. But they placed this monument there as a part of this crossing of the Jordan River. And so this Jordan River has great significance. I want to point out three things to begin about this crossing of the Jordan River that has tremendous significance. If you were at Wendy's on Thursday night, you know that we talked a little bit about the death of Moses. Because we saw that Michael and the devil, they fought over the body of Moses. I'm not even sure that it's talking about the dead body of Moses, but that's neither here nor there. So I got to thinking about the death of Moses a little more. In Deuteronomy 31 that Donnell just read for us, it is the Lord telling Moses, you're going to die, and you are not going into the promised land. I'm choosing Joshua to be your leader. You see that in Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 14, that the Lord commissioned Joshua. Now here's what I want to point out. Imagine you're a group of people, millions in number, and you now have a transition in power. You have someone, Moses, who has performed miracle after miracle after miracle, right? We already pointed out this morning in the auditorium class that the Jews of Jesus' day, they wanted Jesus to do a miracle like Moses. Bring down the bread from heaven like Moses. He gave them water out of a rock. Gave them water that was purified by cutting a tree down and going into it, right? He put a serpent up that would save them from those fiery serpents that were biting on them. This guy, Moses, was the clear leader. Not to mention, he had delivered them out of slavery in Egypt.
Right.
But that was only happening because God had placed him in that and God was empowering them. Well, now you have a group of people who their leader is dying. Their leader is not going to go. So who takes that position of leadership? Does someone just rise up and say, you know what, I'm the one to do this, I'm the strong one? No, it was the Lord commissioned. But you remember even back in the days of, not Noah, but in the days of Moses, did everyone accept the leadership of Moses? No, you remember in Numbers 16, there was a guy by the name of Korah. And he got at least 250 other people with him in his rebellion to say, Moses and Aaron, who made you leaders of us? And you remember what happened to those people? The Lord said, I'll show you. And he opens up the ground, and they are swallowed up by the ground because they did not accept the Lord's leader of his people. Well, I want you to notice the first thing that is important in Joshua chapter 3 and verse 7. That the crossing of the Jordan River is a sign to the people of Israel that Joshua is the new leader. Notice this verse 7. So the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know, as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. You see, people need to know and need to be shown who's in power. And God said, I'm about to do something with you, and everyone is going to recognize that I'm going to be with you just like I was with Moses. Now, you would see when they cross the river, go to chapter 4 now of Joshua. When they cross over in Joshua chapter 4, you would see down, I believe it was verse 8. The people, they did just as Joshua commanded them, and they took up the stones. And all these things take place, and they go about, and I have now lost the verse of which I was looking for, but they obeyed him as they had Moses. This is verse 14. There we go. I actually have it on my PowerPoint. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him, just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. You see, this event is the crowning moment, if you wanted to say that, of Joshua as their leader. That's a pretty significant day, right? Okay, let me give you another significance, a second significance. I want you to look in chapter 4 here, verse 6 and 7, that not only is it a sign to the people who their leader is, remember how we said they had to get those 12 stones out of the bed, and they had to pile those up? Notice verse 6 about this. This you do, so verse 6, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask you in time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Then you'll tell them about the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, and the waters of the Jordan were cut off, so these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. See, this event wasn't just for those of that day. This event in Israel history would be one that they would come back and they would revisit over and over and over every time they passed these stones. It was going to be one of those monumental events. And finally, the third group of people that this event was meant for and was assigned to is at the end of chapter 4, that it was the rest of the world. That all peoples would see. Notice in verse 23 here of chapter 4, Joshua. The Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea. Now, how many of them experienced that as the Red Sea? There wouldn't have been many of them, right? Just children. Because anyone 20 and older, what happened? They did not get to go. So it would have been just a handful, probably, or a few children that may have remembered it, may not have remembered it. Either good or no on all of that, right? So 24. So all the people of event was for everyone, and we know that it scared Rahab, didn't it? We know that Jericho, they had heard about the Red Sea, and so you can imagine that when they heard about this crossing right in front of them, right across from them, the fear that it would strike in those people. That's the significance of this story. Now what I want to do is I want to put us in this story. Because to us, hearing about some river turning into dry land is like very far-fetched. And it's very fairy tale, to use Michael's words this morning. But I think we can see some very cool things about it. So let's pull up a little map here. Thanks to old Google Maps. You probably can't see super well right now the Jordan River, but you see this little line going down the center. Do you see a, is my little laser thing working? That was just a second. You see that there? That's our Jordan River. There we go. There's our Jordan River. So we got that. Okay? You can see how it's separated. They would have been coming, the children of Israel would have been coming from this west side over here. And they would have been crossing somewhere right in here around Jericho. We're a little further over. What did I say? East side to west side? I got to flip backwards. I don't have a little column, a little legend in the bottom right to know east from west. But the right side is east, the left side is west. As clearly the sign says, West Bank. Okay? So that's our Jordan River. All right. So when you think of a river, how big are you thinking here? Michael and I grew up on the Tennessee River. That's a big old river. The Hudson River. Pretty good sized river, right? Let me zoom in here to about a 500 foot level. And I want you to see the Jordan River. So we're 500 feet above ground, and that's how wide it is, okay? So, I wonder if that's the size of the Passaic River. People have to drive over the Passaic River. If you're going to Fairlawn, you're going down the Parkway, you're going anywhere, you got to drive over. So let's put the old Passaic River up. That is also at a 500-foot level. So if you go back, right, pretty small, you go forward. So let's put them side by side. The Passaic River is considerably wider than the Jordan River. See, the Jordan River is more like we would think of probably a creek. But remember how I said this whole thing came up as Mary and I were driving down the road and we were going by this creek? Well, wouldn't you know that I was like, well, let me check Google Maps. Let me look at that creek. So up here at Ed and Mary's house, there is the Rockaway River. Do you see the Rockaway River anywhere? It's right there. And guess what? That thing floods like crazy. That thing can cause a lot of trouble in that area, and it is tiny. And you can look on our map, and we would see those two are very similar in width. You can't do this, but it almost feels like you could get in the middle and you could swim in two strides to the right, swim in two strides to the left. Almost kind of like in between here. It's not quite that close. But those of you that know that area, you understand how small that little creek is. That's the Jordan River. Now I want you to think about that for a second. Is that big of a deal to cross? Like you get there, I mean, that's just a little creek. It's almost like you can reach over the edge and you can touch it. But as our text tells us, that it was during the time of the floods. I want you to go to chapter 3 here of Joshua. And verse 15 of chapter 3. So as soon as the bearing of the ark, they had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priest bearing the ark were dipped in the brink of the water. Now the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of the harvest. That's the scenario in which they found themselves, was during the harvest time, getting there and the banks overflow. So I'm going to put up two videos for you here. I'm going to put up a video here of a calm day. Got a nice little drone that's flying down and over the Jordan River, just so you can see how nice and peaceful it is. And then we'll have a video of the floods of the Jordan River. I want you to just pay attention. I'll talk
talked through it a little bit. There's no real audio here. Well, there's a little white water. Well, that's nothing. A little tube. You'd be pretty safe if you got in an inner tube and you're just kind of floating down that. But you can see again how narrow it is. It's not a huge river in any way, shape, form, or fashion. It's nice and green on one side and on the other. Now, this is not the exact place in which they would cross, but you can see how there's plenty of water. And you remember there in John 3 that John was baptizing in the Jordan because there was plenty of water. There was plentiful water there. So you can see how it would be easy to get in there and immerse somebody. We're not talking about a little shallow little creek or anything like that, but we're talking about nice pools of water in which there were plenty of baptizing. Well, that first map I put up with the Jordan River, there's a mark there that says this is where Jesus was baptized. Don't know if that's the actual mark or not, but there is some history that would indicate that it's probably that site. So again, you can just see it's nice and smooth. Okay, you ready for the floods? Get a little aerial footage here. Now, you can't see a ton going on right now, but we're going to get a good view in a second. But you can see how there's some white water going. All right? So you wouldn't want to get in that by any stretch of the imagination. And you sure don't want to get in that. And it's about to get closer where we're going to see how really ferocious this water is at this moment. There we go. You see how that tiny little thing, you can see just on the other side of the river, it's so close, but so far away. Like we're here, we're there. Look at that. You wouldn't even want to get in that on a raft and go down that. That is very fierce, very ferocious waters that happen to this day in that very river. So does that maybe give us a little picture of on Jordan's stormy banks I stand and cast a wishful eye? Like, I can touch it. But there is this huge, dangerous river in between me and my goal. And what is said to be mine, and you can just tell, you're not getting across that. With children, with all your goods, with everything that you got, you're not getting across that until the seasons change. And that is going to be quite some time. So, how did God deal with this? Right? So he dammed up the waters. And I want you to look there back in Joshua 3. The video should be ending here just about any moment now. But I want you to go back to Joshua chapter 3. And remember that verse we just read in verse 15? I want you to look at verse 16 now. That the waters, they were coming down from above. They stood and they rose up in a heap very far away. And that was as far away as Adam, the city that is beside Seraphim, and those flowing down to the Sea of Yarva, the Sea Salt, or the Salt Sea, they were completely cut off, and they passed opposite of Jericho. I want to talk a second about this damming of the Jordan River. All the way up to Adam, which says the very far away. All right? So in your mind, what is far away that you think that he dammed up this river mileage-wise? I just want you to put a number in your head. This is very far away to dam up a river that is flooding. Maybe you said 5 miles. That'd be a long way away. Maybe you said 10 miles. That'd be pretty good. Let me put up a map. 18 miles is what it seems to be from the ford down to where they crossed opposite Jericho. Can you imagine someone having the power to stop water that is moving that fast in an instant and nothing budges? That's amazing. That instantaneously, from the moment in which they put their feet on the banks of that river, it didn't stop flowing. It stopped flowing and was dried immediately. Imagine you're on your way to that promised land.
and you know that there are giants in the land, and you know that you're going to have to fight, would that give you at all any courage? Man, our God can do something amazing. There was a storm, there was a raging flood right in front of you, and now is not. It's not just the sea. We're talking about a raging flood no longer there. 18 miles away. So, you ready to put it to modern day perspective? So we have the Rockaway River and the Passaic River. Alright? 18 miles away. I thought about this. I was like, I bet that's almost down, if we're taking the parkway, I bet that's almost down to Route 1 and 9 down in Edison. Wouldn't you know, the Bloomfield Glen Ridge exit on the parkway is 148. Guess what number Edison is? 130. God dammed up a river all the way from right here all the way down to Edison. That is unbelievable. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about a tiny little path about this wide in between that they could fit a couple million people over in several hours. We're talking about, hey, counties wide path that you could walk over almost single file. And everyone would go right through. That is power. So they finally cross over. I want you to picture the aftermath for a second. There was a huge storm, flood, right? We just walked through, ain't nothing there. They had heard the stories about what happened with the Red Sea, right? Egyptians tried to cross right after it. God said, no, no, no. Crashes the waves down, they're all swallowed up in the sea. Difference is no one's chasing them now, right? They got nobody chasing them. They're just going across. So how long do you think it would take the waters to fill back up down that 18-mile stretch or so? I'm just going to tell you, it doesn't take long. I remember as a kid. So as a kid, I loved to whitewater raft, and I still love to whitewater raft. And there's a place in Tennessee called the Ocoee River, and I may have spoken about it before, as a matter of fact. It sounds vaguely familiar, but if I have, forgive me. Whatever. So there's the Ocoee River. It has class 5 rapids, whitewater rapids, okay? That's about as high as they get. There are 6 and there are 7s. But 6 and 7s are like, you shouldn't go, but I want to go kind of thing. A 5 is dangerous, but it's safe enough with a guide that, like, it's okay. 6 and 7s, it's your own peril, okay? So the first time we were rafting down this river, you start off on these at this little hut down river, down at the bottom. And then they bus you up on these big old school buses that they've thrown rafts on top of. And then they drop you off right below the dam. All right. Now here's what I remember the most. You're driving up along the river, and there is nothing but this. Rocks. That's all there is. And you can kind of see, the closer you get up to the dam going upstream, you can kind of see how there's a little more water trickling down. But from the time that you start out to the time that you go up, you can, like, you can't believe that this is about to be dangerous. Let me show you a minute 7 clip of the waters here of the Ocoee. So you can see them up here in this kind of left, up in there. Just kind of watch that little area. It's about to get him crazy.
understand what we're talking about here, right? We're not talking about, oh, it just trickled back down and all is good. In a matter of probably an hour or less, water was overflowing again, just like before. Man, that is unbelievable power that God demonstrated that day.
Now it gets us to our little songs here of On Jordan's Stormy Banks I Stand. I want you to picture on the edge of that. Are you even thinking about going across? We're not even remotely thinking about crossing. But God is saying, go. Go into that land. What are you thinking? How? Do what? God says, I'll show you. So on Jordan's stormy banks I stand. As you can see, you can open up your text there, your songbook, number 509. I'm going to put the words up here, but we're going to sing 509 in the meditation here. Here, just a split. We have two hymns with the same words, except for the chorus is different. It's written by the same guy. The music is different in the songs, and we're going to sing both of the songs. But I put this picture back up there because on Jordan's stormy banks I stand, that's that picture from the Jordan River. That's not the Ocoee River. That's the Jordan River. You're not crossing that. On Jordan's stormy banks I stand and cast a wishful eye. Like, I wish that I could be over there. Where my possessions lie. God is telling me that's mine. That's what I have set out for. That is what I'm going for. That is there. Now, you remember how I said some people, they can take crossing the Jordan River multiple ways? One is the actual crossing of the Jordan River where the people go into the promised land. And then the other oftentimes is used as a metaphor. Where we go through the Jordan River, we cross the Jordan River, that is a metaphor for death. And you can understand maybe why that has been portrayed in such a way. That when you get to the other side, you have finally reached the promised land of God. This promise, this place where all of your possessions lie. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 6? Don't lay up treasures on earth where moth and rust corrupt, the rotting thieves break in and steal. But put your treasures in heaven, all those things. Or 1 Peter chapter 1, there is reserved in heaven for you an inheritance. Like, it's not here. You put it all there, and it's like you're so close. But you're so far away. Or you're so close and you're on the brink of death and you're scared all at the same time. You're terrified. But yet you've got a God that can make you pass through those waters. You have a God who is able to take away the sting of death. 1 Corinthians 15. That is. You want to be on that side. Now notice verse 2. O'er all those wide extended plains shines one eternal day. He's painting this picture of there's a storm that is actually happening at the Jordan River. But I want you to notice that phrase, o'er these wide extended plains. I've never been to this side of the world. I would like to go. In fact, I just applied for my passport last week. So maybe I will actually go one day. But you can tell by the topography on the map, guess what you have down where they crossed? Here's a huge ridge, and here's a huge ridge. So what that means is in between, you've got a huge plain area. And what you've got, and you know, so I imagine if you're standing there where they crossed opposite Jericho, if you're there, you're looking around, and you just see this big wide expanse. But yet, you can't go anywhere. You're kind of stuck in all this. But through all that storm shines one eternal day. There, that place on the other side, place in those plains that you see, there God the Son forever reigns. Play on His words there with reigns. But scatters night away. Remember Revelation chapter 22? They need no light, for God is their light. He is their Son. In that place, God is there. He is on His throne, and that is the next verse. It says He's sitting on His throne. I believe that's verse 3. of Revelation chapter 22, there he's pulling that picture. When we're with God, there is no more storm. There is no more rain. All has passed away. Verse 3. So when shall I reach that happy place and be forever blessed? I'm sitting there. Maybe I'm old. Maybe I'm sick. Maybe I'm just ready to go home. When shall I reach that happy place and be forever blessed? Why blessed? How about the Beatitudes? Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the land. Quoting from the Psalms, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the land. Like, it's always been promised to us. Blessed are, like, if you hang around, God will bless you with this land. When? Like, how much longer do I have to go? When shall I see my Father's face and in His bosom rest? There was a statement that is used in the book of Deuteronomy that no prophet ever rose after Moses like him. The Lord knew him face to face. Even Joshua, who came up next, didn't have that privilege. But yet we're told in the book of Revelation, again, a picture that he's drawing from in verse 4 of 22, that we shall see the Father's face. And we're not resting in Abraham's bosom like Lazarus. We will be forever with the Lord. And that all these people, Revelation 14, that they have, oh, by the way, blessed are those who die in the Lord, for they shall have rest from their labors. You see what he's doing there? On top of that, today, as the Hebrew writer says, quoting from Psalm 95, today, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. Why? Because there's still a land of rest that is promised. So we close out with verse 4. So filled with delight, my raptured soul. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, we will be caught up in the air with the Lord. Filled with delight, my raptured soul would here no longer stay. Like, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm ready to cross. Even that means going through the water. And that's his next phrase. Though Jordan's waves around me roll, fearless I launch away. That's like someone saying, I don't care if I drown. I don't care what I got to go through. If that's what it takes for me to get to the other side and get to that land where I'm going to see my Father and I'm going to be forever blessed and I'm going to have rest and I'm going to have all that, so be it. Let them come over. Because I'm going to go away fearless. I want you away. I'm not afraid. You tell me to go, I'll go. That's courage. So the chorus, they both start with, I am bound for the promised land. And I wonder sometimes, like, I'm bound for the promised land. Does that mean like I am enchained, enslaved? Like, I have to go to the promised land. Or I'm choosing to go to the promised land. You know, does that distinction make the difference? You're bound to do something, meaning you have to do it. I have to go to the promised land. Or I'm bound to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to the promised land. I don't know which way the guy meant. I tend to think it could be counted either way, but I'm going to go with, I have to go to the promised land. I am bound for the promised land where we'll sing the song of Moses and the Lamb by and by. Again, quoting from, well, Moses was given a song in Deuteronomy 31 that he was to teach the people before they crossed into the land. But then you have that picture in Revelation chapter 15 where the song of Moses and the Lamb is sung. And there's an interesting thing that I've never thought about before. Before that statement is made of them singing how great the Lord is, John says, and I saw a sea of glass mingled with fire. And those who were on the other side were singing the song of Moses and the Lamb by and by. Well, not by and by, but singing the song of Moses. I never paid attention to the idea there was a sea and they had crossed over. It seems to me as though they had to go through a fiery death or difficult death, but they crossed over and they can sing because they're forever blessed and dwell with Jesus evermore. Like, I don't want to live on this side of the river. I want to be on that side where He is. 1 Thessalonians 4:17. They should be called up together with the Lord, and there we will be with Him forever. And verse 18, the very next verse, 1 Thessalonians 4 says, therefore, encourage one another with these words. Now I want you to notice now the difference in chorus 2 from chorus 1. They both start with, I am bound for the promised land. And here's the encouragement. Who will come and go with me? I'm bound for the promised land. I wonder which one he wrote first. There's a part of me that says, I'm kind of understanding what he thought. We'll be forever with the Lord. Encourage one another. And he's like, you know what? I've got to write a different course. I'm bound for the promised land. Who's going to come go with me? So I'm asking, who's coming with me? I'm bound for the promised land. I'm going. Are you going? Our God can make it all possible. Don't be afraid. Be strong and courageous. You're ready to submit and to baptism tonight. To be washed like in the Red Sea. Children of Israel were said to be baptized into Moses in the Red Sea. You're ready to be baptized into Jesus in these waters back here. And to rise up, no sin, but